This is Sight to the Blind. Before I start on today's episode, I wanted to clear up a question that was asked in the comment section of the last episode about when is the Shabbat. The new moon is the first day, which I showed you or told you on Enoch 78, verse 14. If the new moon, once you find the new moon, it is the first day. The next day after that is the second. The next day after that is the third. The next day after that is the fourth. The next day after that is the fifth. The next day after that is the sixth. The seventh day is the Shabbat for that month before the next new moon. So the reason why the Most High in Amos 8:5 put in there with one of the children of Yasharel when he asked, when can we sell grain? When can we put forth wheat? So and during the new moon, if they couldn't buy and sell, it's a Shabbat. So in order to recognize when it's the next month, it makes more sense that the Most High instituted the new moons to be a Shabbat so you could alarm yourself that the month has changed and that you have to find the next Shabbat. People who are in solar calendars, just regardless of the feast day, regardless of the Shabbat, it's always on the same day. And people who follow the solar calendars and different solar calendars, they end up on the same Friday, Saturday, Shabbats. The Gregorian calendar, Nick Vanderland's calendar, become set of parts calendar. All those calendars ended up on the Friday, Saturday, Shabbat. And they don't have any new moons, or they change the new moons to be for it to be a full moon, which goes against what scripture states. And I've told you that I posted the calendar on Sight to the Blind, the Instagram. I'm sorry, when I told you guys that I was going to post the link, I forgot to do it. But it's Sight to the Blind on Instagram. I have it pinned of the calendar of all of the new moon Shabbats. Now, new moon Shabbats and the feast days for the next month. Now, the reason why that it, the new moon is important because of the book of Numbers, where it's an ordinance that we shall blow with the shofar. That, like, the Most High has us doing, like I said, visual learning. He has us visual learning so we can pay attention to everything. It's not like just, oh, like for us, when we're in the Gregorian calendar, we already set in this calendar. So we're just like, oh, okay, Monday's here. We got to go to work. Like, we know there's something to do on Monday after the weekend. We know when the next month is. But it kind of runs into, so the month starts and ends regardless on Monday. It sometimes ends on a Friday, it's on a Saturday. But we don't pay attention to the first of the month only when we are programmed to with, like, April Fool's. That's the only time that we actually take notice to the first of a month. Any time other than that, we don't pay attention to the first of the month. We don't do any feast day. We don't do any remembrances during that. The Most High wanted us to understand it so easy that he gave us ordinances and statutes to follow so that we would know, okay, this is where the new month starts. And we count 6 days after that first day of the new moon, and it'll get us to a Shabbat for the month. And then we wait to the new moon. Now, the months alternate 29 and 30 based on the moon changing its laws and coming in 10 days too soon. So we're not having a 364-day calendar. No matter how hard you try to force it, it's never going to be a 364-day calendar. No matter how hard you try to force it. I had people trying to throw me off my calendar when I went to Yah about this for confirmation. People are trying to throw me off the calendar by trying to insert 13 months, where it's nowhere mentioned that they ever pay attention or ever observed a 13th month in scripture. It's nowhere to be found. People are making up 13 months and changing laws of the moon and doing all this other stuff that goes along with it, saying that, oh, you know, after the third or fourth year, then the moon, like, we're not in those times anymore. There's a part in Enoch where it says, after the first year, the days will total this in the moon, or the moon will total this. The second year, the moon will total that. But we don't even know, we won't never find the path of years. Just like it's stated in Jubilee. So I'm starting really, really basic from the foundational level of scripture. Because the Most High said we will never find the path of years. We don't know what Jubilee we're in. Even if you try to go back using the Gregorian calendar, the Gregorian calendar is not even that old. It's only about 500 years old, just like the letter J is about 500 years old. So I'm using everything from a foundational level and using Yah to confirm me. That's how I'm doing it. And just surprisingly, my mom brought this up to me that the blood moon that's coming in, the full moon, is going to come in right before the Passover, right before Pesach. The calendar I'm following, based on the Southern Hemisphere, is when we're going to see a blood moon in this country, in America. Now, I'm not taking it as a sign because I'm not looking for a sign, but I just think it's a cool coincidence that I'm figuring out this calendar and I'm using the Southern Hemisphere, and September is South Africa's spring. So having us be on the right season based on the real biblical lands, I think it's important. The cherry on top is just the blood moon happening right when we're going to go into Pesach. I think that's beautiful for those who are trying to follow the calendar and do it the right way. But I'm only using the scriptures and the scriptures that the Most High has confirmed in me. So now you know the Shabbat. If you still are confused, go to Sight to the Blind. I have the calendar dates of the Shabbats and new moons just for the first month. And then when the second month comes, I will put up more of the calendar and dates and everything that correlates with scripture. So I'm not just coming off the top of my head and making these things up. Another problem that we're having in this assembly is some of you are attaching yourselves to multiple assemblies and different communities and causing strife in this walk about unnecessary details. One of those unnecessary details is hair covering, based on what Paul said in 1 Corinthians chapter 11. So we're going to go over this because there was a question posed to me that what should women do? Should women be covered all the time? Should women be covered when they pray? Should women? And I know this comes from whatever assembly or camp people are around, because that's all they talk about. They talk about trying to reprimand and bring women under the submissive role and having them not be submissive in ruach or submissive in deed, but being submissive outwardly by wearing certain apparel. So we're going to try to clear some of that up. 1 Corinthians chapter 11, verses 1 through 12. Be ye followers of me, even as I also am of Mashiach. Now I praise you, brethren, that ye remember me in all things, and keep the ordinances as I delivered them to you. But I will have you know that the head of every man is Mashiach, and the head of the woman is the man, and the head of Mashiach is Elohim. Every man praying or prophesying, having his head down, dishonors his head. Now, it doesn't say dishonors Yah or dishonors Yahusha. It just says it dishonors his head. Or you feel like you're bringing shame upon yourself because you're prophesying and praying with your head down. Now, I pray sometimes, bow down to the ground to show reverence to Yahuwah. So, like I said, some of this stuff you have to take with a grain of salt and have to understand who Paul was actually talking to. Not every woman who prays or prophesies with an uncovered head disgraces the head itself. Not every woman who prays or prophesies with an uncovered head disgraces the head itself. So, there's your answer. It's not required for you to always have your head covered, even in prayer or prophesying. But it is a disgrace for those who are shaven. So he's saying, if you have a shaved head or a bald head, now this could come in one of two things, where either you're trying to humble yourself or you have now tried you are accepting the laws and statutes of the Most High, and you're coming from a different tribe or a different region, or you're a heathen or a Gentile trying to come into Yisrael, and you either are married to an Israelite, because in scripture it says that the woman should be that's coming in from outside of Yisrael needs to be humbled, so she needs to go through a process. For a man indeed ought not to cover his head, for as much as he is the image and glory of Elohim, of Yahuwah, but the woman is the glory of the man. For a man indeed ought not to cover his head. Now, we all know in scripture that Yahusha, Joshua, had to wear a turban. So, like I said, you have to understand where Paul is, who he's talking to, and who he's talking about, because a lot of the Israelites were wearing turbans back then. But what type of covering is he talking about? Is he talking about like a hooded covering? Like what type of covering? It doesn't state here. For the man is not of the woman, but the woman of the man. Neither was the man created for the woman, but the woman for the man. For this cause ought the woman to have power on her head because of the angels. Why do you say power over her head because of the angels? Because what were the angels looking at before they made a pact on Mount Hermon to come into or come unto the daughters of men? They were seeing how beautiful they were. So what he's saying is like, you need to have power over your head. But I don't know why, because we don't read any more stories of the angels sleeping with the daughters of men. We only know that one time. And I'm assuming it never happened again after that, because it would have been in scripture. So I think what they did in the days of Enoch, that was it. I can't picture a fallen angel all of a sudden now sleeping with a daughter with the daughters of men now. Could you imagine? Like one of the angels up there just happened to fall in love with a BBL. Fake breasts, those weird curly, you know, baby haired wigs some of these Negro women wear. Like, I don't see it. It'd be funny, but I don't see it. And it definitely didn't happen anymore after the days of Enoch that the fallen angels slept with women. It doesn't say that anymore. So Paul's just saying that it's better for a woman to be covered or have her hair be a glory or a covering for her, because the angels up there are seeing it. Nevertheless, neither is the man without the woman, neither the woman without the man in Yahuwah. For as the woman is of the man, even so is the man also by the woman, but all things of Elohim. 1 Corinthians chapter 11, 13 through 18. Judging yourselves, is it comely that a woman prays unto Elohim uncovered? This is a question. Does not even nature itself teach you that if a man has long hair, it is a shame unto him? Now, we know of the Nazarenes. We know Samson was forbidden to cut his hair. We know to be a Nazarene, you would never cut your hair or your beard. But like I said before, this comes with a grain of salt. You have to understand who Paul is talking to and when it, around the, what time is he actually talking to the Corinthians. But if a woman has long hair, it is a glory to her, for her hair is given her for a covering. So that is the covering. Why would you need to cover your hair with a covering? It's almost like, why do you women wear wigs over top of a hair? I mean, if you have long, flowy hair, if you have beautiful hair, that is your covering. But if any man seems to be contentious, we have no such custom, neither the called out assemblies of Elohim. There is no custom that said that women needed to cover their hair with a wrap or a turban. It doesn't say that. That's not our custom. This is an ordinance, but it's not a custom for us to do, especially to be a part of the called out assembly. Now, if this is what you're arguing about or arguing with other people that's in this community that you're in, you're in the wrong community. And it's through loneliness and isolation that people are stepping into communities that's not going to serve them. You're stagnating your growth because Y'all not talking, obviously you're not talking about new moons. You're not talking about this calendar. You're not talking about the proper feast days and what to do during feast days. You're not talking about what type of drink offerings, heave offerings, goodwill offerings that you need to show acceptance from the Most High Yahuwah. You're not doing any of that. Y'all talking about if your hair going to be covered or not. Now, in this that I declare unto you, I praise you not that you come together not for the better, but for the worse. So people are going into communities and assemblies, listening to one leader. That leader is filtering his message down to the minions of this assembly. And now everybody's going in and out, battling with each other over small customs, over small ordinances. To be a boot or a thumb over those who are just now coming into the truth or trying to find the truth. Y'all are worrying about the wrong things. For first of all, when you come together in the assembly, I hear that there be divisions among you. And I partly believe it. Now, if your assembly is starting to sound like what they've been talking about or talking against in Corinthians, like I said before, you're in the wrong assembly. And if it's an Israelite or Yasharelli assembly and you're sounding more like the Corinthians, then you should run. You should be glad that the Most High put you in isolation for a reason. And this is the reason. There's a reason why the assemblies right now are small. The only people who are really gravitating to assemblies and communities are people who want to be around camps because they see the glory, they see the protection, they see, you know, in their minds, them being exalted to a platform where everybody's either going at them or everybody's accepting them and praising them and loving them. But none of that is of Yah. And I guarantee you, if I actually knew what camp it was, I could tell you if it was infiltrated by Prince or Freemasonry or Black Greek organizations. It's a telltale sign. If they're walking around with that Star of David, yelling and screaming on the streets, it's already halfway there to be Masonically influenced. Like, Brother Ron did amazing work in breaking down all of these One West camps. And the fact y'all still want to be around these assemblies and communities, that's, you know, that's something that you and y'all got to figure out. Because it's embarrassing you, really, especially when people have already told you what these people are and who they worship, and even their websites tell you who they worship and, you know, what doctrine they're falling under. And y'all ignoring that because you don't want to be alone. There's a reason why he wants us alone. There's a reason why he wants us isolated so we can learn to depend on only him. And so he can show forth how we accept different communications from the Most High Yahuwah. He doesn't deal with us all the same. He communicates with me differently. How he communicates with my wife, how he communicates with my daughter are completely three different ways that he's communicating with us. How can you understand or hear his message if you are listening to the message of those he did not send and those who are authors of confusion? My next topic, and I want to apologize to this brother because I definitely forgot that you asked a question about zitzit or the fringes. And I really didn't pay attention or wanted to go into it at the time because I really didn't, you know, look into it until recently. So this is for you. Now, the whole thing about zitzits and fringes, like I said, if you are around an assembly or around a camp, those are not the proper fringes. And how do we know that? If you ever seen the Israelite camp or IUIC, you can tell where they got those yellow fringes and they got a blue ribbon border all the way around. And they try to validate these fringes with the Assyrian relief or the Assyrian statues or artistic drawings that they had on a wall that shows the captivity of Jerusalem. But we don't know if that's true or not. We just taking whatever you found on internet and taking its word for and not using scripture to back it up. So in Deuteronomy 22, verse 12, it says, "You shall make fringes upon the four quarters of your vesture wherewith you cover yourself." Now, this is a different translation from the King James Version. It just says, "You shall make fringes upon the borders of your garment." But in the sefer, it says, you shall make fringes upon the four quarters of your vesture. So already or automatically, they are in the wrong. And if you go through history, you would see that the Romans had the same type of fringes that IUIC and some of these Israelite camps wear. If you go to Babylonians, you'll see the same exact thing. If you go to the Assyrians and the Aramaeans, they have the same exact thing. The same exact fringes and borders where that those tassels go all the way around. Now, does the Most High want us to be set apart? Yes, he would like us to be set apart. So he would never have us looking like any other than nations that he sent us into captivity to. Let's go to Numbers 15, where it speaks or it clarifies Deuteronomy 22:12. Speak unto the children of Yasharel and bid them that they make tzitzits in the borders of their garments throughout their generations, and that they put on the tzitzit of the borders a ribbon of blue. Now, tzitzit is a twisted thread, a twisted tassel, and it has the blue or the ribbon that goes in down in the middle of it or around into it. And it shall be unto you a tzitzit that ye may look upon it and remember all the commandments of Yahuwah and do them, and that ye seek not after your own heart and your own eyes, after which ye used to go a whoring, that ye may remember and do all my commandments and be holy unto your Elohim. I am Yahuwah Elohakam, which brought you out of the land of Mitzrayim to be your Elohim. I am Yahuwah Elohakam. Now, Hollywood tried or sneakily tried to show the tzitzit through Black Panther. And if you remember the scene where Michael B. Jordan's character, he's in the art exhibit with the jean jacket on and he's kind of swaying, like he's staring at the artwork, but he does a little thing where he sways back and forth just enough where you see like he had a tzitzit like on the border of his jean jacket. And if you understand the character of Michael B. Jordan, where he played Killmonger, he is, quote unquote, an African-American, a Shemite. And the second movie, when they did the next Black Panther, they talked about how he, you know, they tried to save this one girl who became Ironheart, that she was supposedly being hid from, quote unquote, the lost tribes. So they were throwing in Israelite terminology or Israelite doctrine. So they wanted you to see him swaying back and forth with the tzitzit. Now, it makes sense for it to be on the four corners because that's what you look, you would, you know, when you walk and it would sway and move, you would notice it being there. Not having those fringes all the way around where it's just like, it would feel just like a garment. It feels like nothing special because the tassels go all the way around. It makes much sense to have those four, the two tassels in the front, the two in the back, and you would know they were there. Mattiyahu chapter 9, verses 20 through 24. And behold, a woman who was diseased with an issue of blood 12 years came behind him and touched the tzitzit of his garment. For she said within herself, if I may be but touch his garment, I shall be whole. But Yahusha turned him about, and when he saw her, he said, daughter, be of good comfort. Your faith has made you whole. And the woman was made whole from that hour. And when Yahusha came into the ruler's house and saw the minstrels and the people making a noise, he said unto them, give place, for the maid is not dead, but sleeps. And they laughed him to scorn. Now, even after, or even before they laughed him to scorn, going back to the woman who had that issue with blood, it makes sense that if she's touching the tzitzit, either she's on the ground or whatever, but she can reach up and touch the tzitzit, why would she reach underneath? So if Yahusha has a garment on, and we have to assume it's either a long robe or whatever, why would she touch the fringe? If it was a fringe, why would it be all the way down around the ground? And not him wearing the Israelite custom of the tzitzit, having it, you know, the tassel in four corners, and maybe that's what she touched or grabbed onto. Because she, obviously she would end up grabbing his butt, or I don't think she would disrespect him that way. I think that she would, when she was reaching out, she would reach out for that tassel. So even Yahusha was dressing like an Israelite, and people don't read, especially Christians, don't read into that and think he was just some man in a robe walking around with no customs, no lineage, no heritage, and no traditions. And people swear that they follow this so-called Jesus Christ, and they actually don't. Because Yahusha dressed as an Israelite. He went to the feast days of Yahuwah. He went to the temples to pray or to teach. He lived as an Israelite. And dare I say it, because I know it pisses a lot of people off to hear it, he lived as a Hebrew Israelite. That's who he was. That's the tribe he was from. He's from the tribe of Yehuda. Why you think in Revelation it says the lion of the tribe of Yehuda, or the lion of Yehuda? That's from a tribe. So he would do everything that a tribesman would do. Tribesmen would do. It's mentioned again in Mattityahu chapter 23. Then spoke Yahusha to the multitude and to his Talmudim, saying, "The scribes and the Pharisees sit in Moshe's seat. They also say to you to observe that which they observe, but do ye not works in accord with their works? For they say and do not do. For they bind heavy burdens and grievous to be borne, and lay them on men's shoulders, but they themselves will not move them with one of their fingers. But all their works they do for to be seen of men. They make broad their phylacteries," those that Teflon that the Yehudim do in Israel, or Yashareel, the Orthodox Jews do, where they wrap the Teflon around their arm, or their phylacteries around their arm, 7 times. I'm assuming then they was making a show about it. So it was, the tape is usually really slim, but they must have did it so broad where it would wrap all the way around their arm. They make broad their phylacteries and enlarge the tzitzit of their garments. So they're walking with these huge tassels. Huge tassels. Maybe not something that, like, I'm gonna give you the website of where I got mine, but it's different lengths. You can get a 14 inch one, an 18 8 inch one, I think, and or a 16 inch one where it's really, really long. And for my wedding, I got a really, really long white one. I mean, I'm gonna do it big, so I'm gonna get a really, really long white one. So it's different sizes. So obviously they wanted to be seen of others that they are special, or try to be Israelites. And they loved the uppermost rooms at feasts and the chief seats in the synagogues. So they were trying to be us, but never be like us. And they don't even have, if you look at the Yehudim today, they don't have the ribbon of blue in their tzitzit. It ain't even twisted. It's just frayed open. It's fringed open. And they wear it with a, like, a shirt underneath of it that's attached to their tzitzit, attached to this garment that they wear as a shirt. And there's no blue cord in it. But at least they got Deuteronomy 22:12 right. But still, not all of it right. So I'm gonna post a link to where I get my tzitzits, and I forgot to actually post the link of the marriage video that I watched, that I was supposed to post the link, but I forgot to do it. And I'm gonna post it in this episode, or it's posted in this episode. But I'm gonna go back to Deuteronomy 22, verses 8 through 11, where it talks about the fringes. I want to talk about Deuteronomy 22, 8 through 11. When you build a new house, then you shall make a battlement for your roof, that you bring not blood upon your house if any man falls from there. Now, you should know what a battlement is. Obviously, they were walking around on the top of their roofs, either as a watchman, a protector, or somebody that's guarding the house. That's important. When I talk about the Most High wants us to visually learn, you cannot have a weak roof. It has to be strong. So basically, he's saying, I'm teaching you have a strong covering. A covering so strong that it will be able to sustain a man up there to keep watch. Even if you went up there, you went up there to keep watch over your household. This is why I love the Most High. Because he's not only showing us by his miracles and wonders, but he also wants us to partake in what it means to be a watchman or a coverer for our own houses. It's much more than just building a house and putting over a roof and like, all right, I did it. No, it's much more spiritual than that. He wants us to take care in how we make our roof strong. Because if we know how to make a roof strong and we know that we are a covering for our household, then we will know how to be strong when the enemy comes. We know how to be a watchman when the enemy comes. That is more important. So when you're doing your work and he asks you, say like, just like Noah, he asked Noah to build an ark. But he understood the work that had to go into it. He understood the whole time, the long years that he went building this ark, he had to remain faithful in order for that ark to be blessed. That means Noah could not sin while building this ark. He had to have faith that what he was doing was going to actually come into fruition. The Most High wanted him to build something with his hands, not knowing if it was ever going to be safe or not. That all that he did, he would still have to have Yah be his trust, be his refuge. So you people telling me like, oh, I can have faith without much works. I don't get it. Then he must not called you for a purpose. The Most High has not called any of us just to read scripture and sit on the couch. The Most High has not called us to just read scripture and to go argue in public or argue on the street corners. That's not what he called us for. He called us so we could understand our role either as a man, as a woman, or as a child, that he will give us a mission to understand his purpose. Verse 9, you shall not sow your vineyard with diverse seeds, lest the fruit of your seed which you have sown and the fruit of your vineyard be defiled. Here the Most High is teaching the Israelites how to be set apart. And being set apart means setting apart your fruits, your seeds, that if you mingle them together, you will defile them. If you mingle them together, you will defile them. The same that he made, the same symbology with clay, trying to mix different resources with clay and marring it up. So right there, he's teaching you that this seed has a purpose. Doesn't mean that seed is bad if it's fruit or, you know, it's for the grape or for the vineyard. He's not saying that these seeds are bad. He's saying if you mix them together, they will be defiled because they will be choking their purpose. So that's why the Most High made us set apart from other seeds, because every seed has a different purpose. So you don't need an assembly. That's different seeds. Some people can thrive in a community and thrive in assembly. But for his true purpose, he will set you in isolation because you are a different seed. The fruit you're going to bring forth cannot be around other fruits or other seeds. If it is, it'll start to choke it. I'm pretty sure you've gone to a garden or you've gone to, I don't know, a farmer's market or whatever, and you've seen how different fruits and different vegetables grow. And you've seen that if they're too close to one thing, they don't grow as much. They don't get the right resources. They don't get the right sun or the right rain or not in the right soil. Because people mixed them together because there was a lack of land or a lack of resources. That's what he's saying. I can't bring you to the fullness or the completeness of your seed, the completeness of your fruit, if you're too busy being choked by seeds that you shouldn't be around or seeds that I had never planted you next to. That's why he wanted us to understand how to sow. Sowing things in its proper season, sowing things in its proper time. so they can come up when he has blessed it. You wouldn't plant watermelons or any type of, you know, summer fruits in the summertime and think it's going to be blossoming and blooming and bringing forth fruit in the winter if it's a summer fruit. You wouldn't do the same thing if it was a winter fruit. You wouldn't plant it in the winter and expect it to show up in the summer. So through visual learning and actually putting forth actions to work and letting it work for you, you still had to trust in the Most High that this is what he wants me to do. He wants me to be separate. In order for things to grow, in order for things to bloom, it needs to be separate. You shall not plow with an ox and an ass together. And you know how Moshe says you cannot muzzle the ox once it starts treading out the grain. The ox and the ass got two different functions. Two different functions. One is put to work and one is carrying the work. One is putting to work and one is carrying the work. So you use your ox to tread down whatever you wanted to tread so you can plant your seed. The ass is when everything blooms, blossoms, fruits, everything. You put it in your sack and you put it on back of the ass and let it go where it needs to go. Why would you put an ox right next to an ass when they have two different functions? One is going to slow up the other. One is going to be annoyed with the other. They might not even get along. They're at different paces. Again, this is why the Most High wanted us set apart. This is why he wants you set apart. This is why you are his ox, because you have a particular purpose that he needs to set you at a particular pace in order to shore forth fruit for his righteousness. If you are next to an ass, y'all are not going to be going in the same direction at the same speed because you need two different things. Even resources, even food, you need different things to be able to function. So again, the Most High is showing us how we are set apart. We are different animals to each other. Yes, we have one body, one assembly, but we have different parts to that body. It's different parts to the assembly. It's different and diverse gifts and spiritual gifts. Now that I'm on spiritual gifts, have any of you started to notice that you're able to almost predict when somebody's going to interact with you or not? I'll go back to when you were a childhood. You remember when you watched cartoons as a kid and you understood there was an artistic background to whatever cartoon you was looking at. And you would know that a specific object was going to be picked up or touched by an animated character to be used somehow, but you knew it looked different than the background. Like you could tell, like, all right, Bugs Bunny is going to pick up that anvil or he's going to pick up that rock and throw it. That you could tell there was a difference in the background and difference in the art sketches. It's starting to be like that for me. I could just be around people and I could lock in to one person. I was like, this person is going to eventually start talking to me. And most times it happens. I've been real good at it for some reason with my daughter's tennis tournaments. I could watch a girl play and be like, that girl is going to be in the finals. I'm going to have to see this girl play against my daughter. And I've been right two out of the two times that it has happened. Or from around people, and I could just sense this person's going to end up coming to me and talk to me about something, and I would know what they want to talk to me about. That's how like heightened my spiritual gifts are right now. But I couldn't achieve this spiritual gift of knowing certain things and feeling certain things if I'm in an assembly or in a community, because it would dull my senses. I would not be hearing the voice of Yah. I would be hearing the voice of the assembly, of the community most times. So how can you lock into your spiritual gifts if you're always around people? It's going to come a time that you won't be around people. You will be isolated. Your phones may be shut off. There won't be no Wi-Fi. How will you know where to go out of your door and make a left or a right if you're so used to listening to noise around you? How can you notice? You drowning out how Yah talks to you, how he directs you. You shall not wear a garment of diverse sorts, as of woolen and linen together. Now, I seen the video where a young man was talking about why you couldn't wear wool and linen together. I knew it had to do with, like, the frequency. But even the texture. One is light, one is heavy. Two different purposes. You cannot mix two purposes. You can't. One is for the warm, one is for the winter or the cold. You put both on, you look like a hot mess. You look foolish. You don't know which way you're going. You look double-minded. So I know it's deeper than just the frequency of the material. But it goes to the Most High wanting us to be separate and knowing what is for a purpose. That you cannot mix purposes, because then you will defile the entire movement. You would defile the entire purpose of what he has sent you to do. Just like you can't mix with what Pastor Darby tried to do. He tried to mix Christianity and Israelite culture or Israelite scriptures. He tried to mix it. He tried to get a couple of pastors to go into Africa, into the promised land, to do conferences and seminars blending Christianity and being an Israelite. If you go through some of his later sermons, he starts talking about how he knew that he's an Israelite. He knew that he was a tribe of Judah or Yehuda. But still, he was only speaking it from a Christian mindset. He wasn't really living as an Israelite. He was knowing of it, but still living and talking in a Christian mindset. And then later in his videos, he started doing the whole sowing a seed and you will get money back. Like, he started doing that little prosperity gospel, because obviously when you speak in the truth in his church or any church like that, and you speaking what he's speaking, not many people are going to show up to want to hear it. I mean, he was dropping truth bombs. He was waking up a lot of people. I'm the one of the people that he woke up. But it's that type of message is not going to garner a lot of parishioners. It's just not. People rather hear honey and candy and sweet things in their ear all day long and not preparing them for the end days or the end times. People rather hear a prosperity gospel. I don't have to take accountability because God got it gospel. Jesus is accepting to everything gospel. You can be gay, straight, or trans gospel. People don't want to hear the type of truth of how this world is ran. So he started that, oh, if you sow a seed, you'll get this in return. This is what it says in Galatians, da-da-da-da. So the Most High took him up out of here. Doesn't it say in Zechariah chapter 14 that he would turn, like he would, what did it say? He said he would smite the shepherd and let the sheep scatter. And then he would turn his hand upon the little ones. 2/3 of every nation should be cut down, but the 1/3, I'm going to bring them through the fire and try them as gold's tried. So him trying to put Christian pastors in this Israelite space, Yah stopped that. Especially when it was at the beginning of this awakening. Yah's like, nah, you ain't doing that. So that's what I wanted to speak on. The fact that Yah is a beautiful teacher when it comes to visual learning. The same thing I talked about when he had Yirmiyahu put this belt and a rock up by the Euphrates River and leave it there and watch you get all marred up and say, this belt, it's like the children of Yasharel, because they have been idle and they haven't been doing nothing that I told them to do. So over time, they had become weathered, not used for nothing, not good for anything. And I know there is other symbolisms that he uses, but it's amazing that Satan understands this too. Because that's how Satan's world is set up, through symbolism. He's like, oh, I understand that you do this through symbolism. I understand that you teach your children, your prophets, through symbolism. Just like how Ezekiel had to lay on the side for X amount of days. It's like one of the prophets had to walk around butt naked. He understood. Satan's like, oh, he's teaching them through symbolism. So what do you think Satan did? He started teaching his minions through symbolism. It comes from somewhere. It's just the respect should be aimed at the Most High Yahuwah, because it's beautiful the way he does it. It's not wickedness. It's actually teaching you something. It's actually getting you to go and think deeper to why I'm doing this. Why am I building my household up? So I can trust in the Most High for him to sustain it. That he'll give me the resources. I just need to know how to build it. And then when I look at it myself, I can build myself up. If I feel like I'm weak and there's cracks in my Ruach, I know I can go to certain scriptures to help me build it up or patch it up. Or, you know, if any of you are good with masonry, grout it up. Then you would know how to do that with scripture. If any of you knew how to build anything, when you look at yourself, you build yourself up. But at the same time, when you know, when you're not living right and you're living unrighteous, you break yourself down too. You see how people, you know, demolish buildings, or if you had a project and you no longer wanted it anymore, you could take a bat to it or you could destroy it. You know what it looks like to destroy something. So you know when you are attached to a vice or you're attached to sin, you know how to look at it the same way you look at destroying a project. All right, this is what I got to do. I have to use this type of force, this type of energy to destroy what's attacking me, destroy what's attached to me, because I want to start over. It's truly amazing that we learn the things that we learn from scripture and understand the symbolism of Yah to get a deeper feel of how he wanted us to live our lives, that he was for sure promising us that he would never leave us, that he would truly redeem us. All we needed to do was the work. That's it. All we needed to do was the work. That he would not abandon us if we did the work. Every morning you should get up and clock in. I'm here to do the work. What do you want me to do? Sometimes we put so much emphasis on the world that we have ahead of us or the world that we're living in now, trying to validate ourselves through work that will never be appreciated, work that will never be the entrance to heaven, the work that will never gain us access to Yahusha. But we only do it because we think we need to do this to live and survive. When Yahusha has said that man does not live on bread alone, but the word that proceeds out of his mouth, the mouth of the prophets, the mouth of Yahuwah. The Most High knows what you want. Yahusha has said this. He knows what you want before you even ask it. All he wants to see is what you're willing to do for him in order to achieve it. If he wants you to build a house, understand why he wants you to build this house. If he has called you to be a father, understand why he has called you to be a father. If he calls you to cover a stepchild, wonder why he's asking you to do this. It's based on the work that something in your Ruach that needs to be fixed, or a gift or a spiritual gift that you have not found yet because you're either idle, you're shying away from it, or you're just not privy to the situation, the opportunity that's given to you to change your life. After a while, you should start leaving this world alone, truly leaving this world alone, and start searching for a world above this firmament. Because once you start doing that, everything you look for, everything you want, everything you need will be added to you. That's why I said that Yahusha had to just shake his head internally and either laugh or be disappointed or disgusted when he tried to tell the guy, the rich guy, that leave all you have, sell it, and come with me. And the man's like, nah, I'm good. I got too many possessions. I can't do it. Not knowing that this guy could die tomorrow, He could die the next hour or the next second, and he would take none of his possessions with him. Even Solomon talks about, what is the point of amassing all this wealth if you're just going to leave it to somebody else to take care of it? He talked about having gold reserves and having all this money, having all these houses, his summer houses, these vineyards. And after he's dead, he can't take none of this stuff with him. And he will leave into the hands of people he won't even know will take care of it or not. So what is the point other than just paying rent and putting clothes on your back and food on your table? After that, when you're dead, you take none of those merits with you. No one will care if you were ever a CEO. No one will care if you were just a grunt. If you was just an entry-level person. No one will care. There were people who had nothing in this lifetime have everything in the life after because of the faith of Yahusha. Why would you can't take anything corruptible into the next world? All of our works, all of our money here, it's like milk. It will sour. It will curdle. Like guacamole, it will go bad fast. But the riches that Yahusha and Yahuwah have for us, that is the work that we are preparing for. That is the vineyard that we are sowing for. That is the house or the roof that we are preparing to build up. Where it does not shake, where it does not falter, and it will not ever lack rain or lack resources or lack sun or lack soil. And for you Israelites, you should be getting ready to prepare your minds to start sowing in a field that is not in America after this second Exodus. That's where your mind should be. Where I'm going to do the next sowing. When I'm going to make my own battlement of my own house. I lived in an apartment all my life. When can I get my mansion? And understand the work that comes with making a strong roof. Because I've been making my household spiritually under a strong roof. By following the laws, statutes, commandments, ordinances, feast days, new moons. Like I talked about before, that you are building up your altar. You just don't see it. You're building up your altar. Just like Yah told Ezra, you have a treasure of good works, and it will not be shown unto you until the last days. You want to put so much on your altar, figuratively, you feel like it can't fit in heaven. You don't want to go to the Most High with, you know, two plates on your altar. Because you feel like all I need was faith. All I needed to do was read. All I needed to do was stay out of trouble. Go back and read the books of Deuteronomy, or go back and read really the Old Testament and find and search out the symbolisms and metaphors and what Yah had his prophets do or had his children do to understand the work necessary to prove yourself. I'll see y'all next week.